Okay, we're starting the fifth parak, Lamed Amid Beis. Ein oimdin l'spalel el mitoyach koyvid rosh. So, the simple translation is that one should not stand in daven unless they have, unless you have a heavy head, koyvid rosh.
What does that mean?
What exactly does that mean? So if we look in Rashi, Rashi tells us, koyvid rosh, hachna. Hachna is modesty, some level of almost a, some level of humility, of being humble. And some explain,
Dalf me up, you know, you're standing.
Right.
That's
it. Exactly. And like, and therefore, if you realize where you're standing in front of Hashem, then a person will certainly be more humble and modest. Pnei Yeshua explains the idea of a koyvid rosh, which means your head is heavy. When something is heavy, you can't lift it up as high. So it's weighing you down. So like, that's how when davens, they look downward and they're not wandering around, which also shows that you're showing respect.
Or
and
that whatever's on your mind, you should rest, check it, you know, at the door when you walk into shul, and then, you know, forget about it. Still be there anyhow, so you might as well, you know, clear your head.
Right, right. So if we look just for a moment on this page that I made photocopies of, I underlined some of it. So, as we saw, Rashi says it's a language of Hachna. And then I underlined the words of the Rabbeinu Yonah, the very top. Hainu, she sha'avid ha-moach shehu barosh Hashem, that a person, when they serve with using their mind, which is in the very top, to serve Hashem, levado, only, and to only think of Hashem, Lohasir kol hamachshavos hazaros, to remove any other strange thoughts. Sheim minyanim gashmiyim v'tzarchi oilam hazeh. Anything which pertains to the material world, or anything which is tzarchi oilam hazeh, anything which pertains to this world, you should remove yourself from it. So that's, that one is a koyvid rosh. And that's how the Ritva explains this similar, that by being a koyvid rosh means that you're in control of your head, which means that before you daven, you shouldn't allow all these idle thoughts to go in.
That's why it's very hard to walk into shul. It's not davening this, and I always try to say that. So you got to get your mind fit. Even, and it's still hard then anyhow, because
right,
we're only human.
Right.
You start things coming to your head no matter what you think.
Right.
I mean, unless, you know, it takes a rare person to be able to say, you know,
correct. No, and then we'll see in the next line of the mission in a few minutes, which echoes exactly what you said. But if you look now in the second paragraph, which is underlined, it says, V'alze, Masha Pnei Yeshua. Pnei Yeshua says, I don't really understand the words of the Rabbeinu Yonah, that you're supposed to remove yourself of any material thoughts or any needs of this world. It says, L'omze hiskavanu chazal. This cannot be the intention of our sages when they instituted the Shemoneh Esrei. Ki kol inyoni hatvila heim srichim gushmayim sh'adam mavakish miboro. How could you remove all the needs of this world when you look through the Shemoneh Esrei?
You're asking for everything.
You're asking for all these physical needs, your health, money, whatever. The lo yiskin sha'adam yivakish devarim gashmoyim bizman shemanutak lachlotin minagashmius. It doesn't make sense that if you are removed from the thoughts of the material world, you'd be asking for things. It doesn't make any sense, because it shows that your mind is not really on what you're saying. So if you're supposed to go through this mental process of removing and becoming completely spiritual, disconnecting yourself from the physical world, so how could you be davening what we daven? He says, Lehebuch, ha'adam sarach b'tfila l'chavin es perishamilo, ha'perishamilin. You have to know what you're saying. And levakish es sarachav ha'gashmoyim. You have to know the actual words that you're saying, which include asking for physical things. So to divorce your mind from the physical things makes no sense.
Excuse me for interrupting. Do you have Michael Engel student? Is he going to some kind of procedure?
I'm going to give him a call tonight. Shkoyach. I don't know.
Yeah.
He was in the hospital a couple of months ago.
Yeah, but that was for something else.
Yeah. All right. I'll let you know. Next paragraph. Shekol ma'ashatur kosev yeish la'asosim lifnei hatfila. So the Pnei Yeshua says that perhaps this is what it says. In oyvin l'spalel means that before you daven, you should remove yourself of these different thoughts. But then when you get to the davening, you certainly have to concentrate and say the words and understand the words that you're saying.
Well, maybe you could look at it a different way, that yes, we all have our troubles, this, that, and other thing. Oh, yes, with our koshos, fine, but also when we daven, we're supposed to be davening for other people also, not just for ourselves. So,
that's true also.
The other thing is supposed to have in mind other people, really not so much for ourselves, davening for, because it's, if you look at the brachos themselves, it's not Rafaini, it's always Rafainu,
right,
etc., etc. So you ask for Klal Yisrael,
right.
So that's really, so it's as far as your personal things, you're supposed to let them go. So I mean, that could be an answer back to,
yeah, that's good.
Of looking at it that way.
That's very good. That's very good. So the, so it could be to remove yourself of the needs of this world as your own
personal,
selfish,
right, thing. Your own selfish things, but with Klal Yisrael, with Dominic, because.
Right.
In the way, you know, except that, you know, when sometimes they die, I'm like, but my offer, if I need this, I never understood that. I mean, it's like, huh? You're asking for yourself. It never got that, you know, but who am I to question? I mean, is that the only one it does?
It's just a pronunciation.
But if you look at it, you're taking it out of the collective and you're putting it into me.
Assuming, I think that's how they pronounce the, that's how they say it for you.
Right.
But that's, God understands what they really mean. So if you look onto the next side, the second paragraph, Batur brings down previously in the words of Pnei Yeshua, and this is kind of what you said before, Shechavin Pershimilim, Pershimilos, you know the words you're saying, Shemoitzi Besvasa, that's coming out of your mouth, V'yachshav Ki'il Shechina Kenegdo, and you should realize that you're standing in front of God. So that's, perhaps, all, these are all different insights as to what the first sentence of this means, of Kovid Rosh. Okay, so let's now continue. As you mentioned before, one way that this could be accomplished. Says the Mishnah, Chasidim Harishonim Hayu Shoyin Shoachas Mispalin, that they would not just go to Shul, but they would actually prepare themselves for an entire hour, and then they would daven afterwards. Kadesh Yechav Nulibim Lavim Shema Shemayim. They needed this time to be able to have the right mindset so that they'll be able to daven to Hashem. And then the Mishnah concludes, and the Gemara is going to define this greater, because it certainly doesn't mean one can put themselves in such danger that their lives can be taken away in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. But afil hamelech shoyel b'shloimoi lo yashivenu. Even if a king asks your welfare, says hello, you should not answer him. Depends on who, which king, what type of king it is.
Right.
We're going to see.
Because it may be a Sakanas Nefashis.
Right. If it's a Sakanas Nefashis, then certainly you could. But this is going to be dealing with a Melech Yisrael that knows what you're doing and why you're not answering him. But if it's someone who perhaps we don't necessarily trust will understand, then you could be Masik. You certainly could interrupt. And then the last sentence also the Gemara defines greater. It says, V'afil nachash koirach al a capable yasik, that even if a snake is wrapped around one's ankle, also one should not be mafsik. You don't make any interruptions. So as you're in the middle of davening Shemoneh Esrei in the jungle,
and a boa constrictor is wrapping himself around you, just sit down and daven.
So the Gemara discusses if it's poison, if it's not poisonous, how you know.
Wait, yeah, how you gonna check? You know?
Right.
Excuse me, hold the phone. Right. So that's the thing. So how do you know without breaking your kavana to check what kind of snake it is that's wrapping himself around you?
That's another question, right?
And a boa constrictor can just crush you to death, it doesn't have to bite you.
Right. So obviously it depends on the type of snake, depends if you're aware of the dangers. But if we look back on this this handout, this page, you'll see it discusses this further and actually considers this to be an issue. Right? He brings down the reason Shulyasiku mitne she'enu vadai shishchenu. It's not for sure that it's going to bite you. Okay? Doesn't mean it's going to necessarily kill you. You don't even know if it's going to bite you. So on this, the Rashash asks the following question. What do you mean? Because you don't know for sure. Right? It says, Halo savik pakuach nefesh. Gam kein daicha shamas. V'yafil sveik sveika. He gives an example to Gemara and Yuma that even if there's a doubt and another doubt on top of it, you can break Shabbos. So because of the potential of danger of a life, of pikuach nefesh. So if you're in the middle of Shemone Esrei, and that's Shabbos, and we don't, there's no comparison to Shabbos and Shemone Esrei. Shabbos is much more severe. If you don't daven, don't go to shul for mincha, or mincha, you miss mincha, you're not chayav misa. If you break Shabbos, it's a capital offense. So, yet we're so lenient when it comes to Shabbos because of pikuach nefesh. So if a snake's wrapping around this guy, it's whatever.
Right.
So it makes no sense. So in this, if you look at the next paragraph, which I underlined, the Tosfos, Gabi Nafal Mefoilus Al Chametz. So what happens, says the Gemara in Pesachim, if you have Chametz, and a house falls down on it. The Gam Hecha, Diyesh Safik Nachash, Sarcha Hoitzi Chametz, Bemar V'chatzinam, V'loi Chashin Mehanachash. So you have to go into that rubble, and find that Chametz. Obviously it means, you still own it. You can be making hefker if you can't find it, obviously, like B'dikas Chametz, but if you can get it, get it. And even if, because now there's all this rubble and all this garbage, there may be a snake roaming around, we're not concerned that you're going to get hit by a snake. Not gonna, why? And here's the difficult words. The Shluchei Mitzvah, it's on the back page, the Shluchei Mitzvah Einon, Nizukin. When it comes to someone who's engaged in the mitzvah, they are not going to be endangered. Shluch a mitzvah, once you're, if you're doing a mitzvah, there's no worry, you're not going to have to, nothing's going to happen to you.
So I could ask questions about that.
Well, obviously it doesn't mean you can put yourself in a makom sakana.
No, not if you're possibly, you're sitting, you know, how many Jews were sitting learning yeshivas and the Nazis walked in and they killed them, they did everything for them.
Right.
You can't be, what's the bigger mitzvah than leaving the Torah? We said leave the Talmud Torah, Kenegi Kulam. So I have to ask him a question.
You're right. That's the expression, that's the word. So exactly what does it mean? It's hard to understand. But obviously you can't put yourself in a makom sakana. You have to put yourself in a safe environment. You have to make all the hishtadlus necessary. But if you're involved in a mitzvah, then you're more protected. You're safer. Okay, you can maybe learn it on a simplistic level. You're protected from doing averas or from the Yetzer Hara.
So on the other hand,
that's not really what it's
transcending. This way, you're constantly looking out here. This morning, I heard the news that came out. When he was last night, they said all the heads of the Homeland Security says there's definitely going to be an attack in ATX, especially the ones they're convinced based on this. So what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to be, don't worry about it. I'm just going to learn.
Right.
How do you know what I'm saying to you? So how do you protect yourself? How do you, you know,
to be in heightened alert.
Heightened alert. You got to be in alert, so you can't. You know, you got to be looking over your shoulder. How can you do things? You know, put yourself. Because if they want to, the best place they have to attack is a shul or whatever it is. They would love that nothing better.
Correct.
Think about it.
You're right.
Not that one stupid guard in a shul without a gun. He has, you know, it's funny. I'll
that doesn't know that anyone who's coming
years
in, coming
ago,
out.
I was doing business with a guy, a Jewish guy.
Yeah.
And he moved from Detroit to Boca Raton.
Right.
And he showed me, he says, come and visit me. He sold his business, very successful. This guy was, you know, he was a smart, he wasn't a religious guy, but he had the exclusive Rolex watches in the corporate field. And he showed me a check for $1 million commission. He sold $20 million of Rolex watches to GM. This is heyday. And he did very, very well. And he had enough. He sold his business. He moved to Boca. He calls me up. He said, come visit me. I was going to Miami. Okay, I'll drive up. So I drive up. It takes me an hour and a half to get up there. This, he shows me this beautiful home. He's a room. There's a club. And this. He said, look how I live. He says, two guards. You see the two guys. I said, Ron, with all due respect, you're an idiot. He says, what do you mean? He said, I just drove off from Miami Beach. I said, listen to Miami Beach. Miami City. I mean, like, we went this machine.
Right.
Garbage living there, kids don't have guns. I said, what's the stop? Five or six of them getting in a car, driving them. Do you see these two guards? Two things are going to happen. Either they're going to run away, because they'll come with machine guns if they have pistols.
Right.
Or they'll shoot them. And the next thing you know, the guy will be sitting on your beautiful white couch saying, this is my house, what are you going to do about it?
So
he says to me, he says, that's what I hate about you. You're such a realist. He says, you're right. He says, you know, it's a false sense of security that we have. So just because the fact that you put someone, you know, it's funny. Years ago, when I used to travel a lot, when we had Italians, I used to go to the shul in Florence.
Yeah.
That guy's machine guns in front of the shul. Because at least they have to have something to protect them. It's like,
have a little, see, it's great to have a guard. I laugh. I say to my wife, I said, this is a joke. I said, you might as well not have anybody. Because what is this poor guy going to do? Either he's going to run away, you know, God forbid. Because really, if I was a terrorist, I'd be the worst terrorist in the world. People say, you're lucky you're not a terrorist. Because the things that you can do,
of course.
You know, watch movies. So it's a false sense of security that we have that you can really stop anything. Because it comes back to years ago, I watched a program after John Lennon was gone. Larry King and his Ringo Starr said, you have security guards. And says, yeah, he says, we did for 6 months. And after we came to us, if somebody wants to get you, and this is the philosophy of the suicide bomber, or the kamikazes in World War II, my father told me, he says, my father fought was in the Philippines, and he says, you couldn't stop them. He says, if somebody doesn't die, it's like, this is a true.
It's all about the die of their life.
If somebody doesn't care about the life, it's like, the father said this, you cannot, then it's almost you can't win.
It's impossible.
Because it's impossible. Look what's going on today. And this is the point, so you go protect yourself. You can't.
No, it's impossible.
That's the frightening thing the world we live in.
It's been miraculous that.
It just shows that there's a God in heaven because we think there's no more. America's Achilles heel is their openness. You know, it's like these idiots with this guy on Christmas. Said, well, we were going to interview him when he came to Detroit. Idiot, they were going to try to blow up the plane when it was in the sky, not when you guys got to Detroit. What kind of morons you are. I have to show your mom, I showed it to my class yesterday. There's a thing about Obama, about the things that this man has done. 1 year of presidency, I will blow you away. You will not believe. You know, and each one says this, but that they, people say that didn't matter. It was one little thing. Each one, in my opinion, was more than just it didn't matter. But read, it's 5 pages of an email put together. If I remember, I'll bring it to you tomorrow. It didn't matter. I showed it to my class. I said, this man's our president?
Wow.
It shows what a bunch of idiots, how stupid we are. And that's what I'm saying. You're going to protect this country. You have people come out. What are they trying to tell? Okay, we know that you're coming.
Right.
But we can't do anything about it, basically. That's what they're saying. They're counting on the testimony of this idiot, this 21-year-old kid, telling Al-Qaeda techniques. If you don't know what Al-Qaeda techniques right now, this is up to us.
You're right. It's a problem.
Very problem.
The Shluchim is saying in the Zakin, Al Basafik Akrov Ein Moitzin Achamez. Is when it comes, if there's a scorpion, that we don't mess around with scorpions. Kivan the shchia chazeka, because when it comes to scorpions, they're more likely to bite. Lo amrina and shlichim itzin zokin. We don't apply that principle. V'chein halacha. So if it's the danger is shchiach, then we don't say, oh, you just do mitzvahs and you're safe. So if there's something which, if there is a scorpion or there are people that act like scorpions, then there's no shluchim mitzvah anymore. They'll do damage. There's nothing you can do about it. Lefizem, therefore, it gives an interesting answer to the question. Kishayimid b'tfila, halo hu shluch mitzvah. So if you're davening, you're engaged in a mitzvah. Imkin b'vadai loyinazim ma'nachash. This is how we answer the Rashash, that we're not concerned that the snake is going to do any damage, because the shluchim is in his zaken. L'kach ein kana feel suffik b'kuach nefesh. There's no danger. You're not in danger because the snake, first of all, the snake's not, doesn't bite usually, and in the small chance that it would maybe bite, but since you're doing a mitzvah, you're protected. Any situation where it's the likelihood is good or high, then we don't apply shluchim mitzvah. But if there's a small chance, which is a snake, which is not going to want to bite you, but small chances, we apply shluchim itzin nizokin. So therefore, if that snake wraps around your ankle, you can keep davening, nothing to worry about, daven with kavana. Ma'ashein kin b'nafal hagal she'enu shliach mitzvah, harizaz savik p'kuach nefesh v'daich ha'shavas. However, when the Rosh Hashanah asked the question about the situation of Shabbos, that you can break Shabbos even for a Sveik Sveika, that's when a building falls down and your concern is there's someone in that building. So there's no mitzvah in that particular situation involved. There's no mitzvah that's being done. So therefore, one could break Shabbos. So there's a concept of danger. There is a possibility of danger that someone's there. And therefore, we don't apply shluchim mitzvah in nizakin because there is no mitzvah, and we don't. That's the issue of pikuach nefesh. But we don't say this pikuach nefesh in a situation when a snake wraps around your ankle because we assume that you'll be protected by the fact that you're performing a mitzvah. That's the explanation. Okay. Anyway, but we're going to discuss this at greater length when we get to the Gemara later on. All right, so let's just see the next piece of Gemara for a few minutes. Min ha'animili. So how do we know this? How do we know what? That when a person davens, one should daven only with a kavod rosh, with his heavy head. So the Gemara gives different interpretations. Omar Rav Elazar. So Rav Elazar says, the pasuk tells us, v'hi moras nefesh. If you look on the side, that's referring in Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Perek Aleph. So it's referring to Tfilas Chana. Will be actually when Chana was being mispalel for a son, which of course she ends up having, as the book gives away, Shmuel. So it says that she was moras nefesh. She had a very bitter soul. She was davening Kriyel with so much kavana, and that's the benchmark of how we're supposed to daven, and therefore that's how we learn from Chana the importance of davening with a kavod rosh. So, wait, so one second. But my, how do we know that that's the case? How do we know we have to daven like her? Dilma Chana Shani, maybe she's different to having Marie Reliba Tuva, because she was very, very bitter. She was not a typical situation. She was a woman who was longing children. Her co-wife Penina, who had 10 kids at the time, constantly harassed her and made fun of her. So she lived a very stressful life. So her tefillah is understandably going to be with a tremendous impact, very powerful. But that doesn't mean necessarily we all have to daven that way. And some people focus on the word v'hi in the pasuk. V'hi moras nefesh. It says that she was bitter. It doesn't mean that anyone else's tefillah has to be that way. It was hers. V'hi moras nefesh. El om Rav Yossi Rav Chanina Mahacha. Says, let me learn it out from another source, from David Melech. V'ani b'roiv chasnecha, abo be'secha. And I, with your abundant level of kindness, I will come to your house, ishtachvel hecha kodshecha, and I will bow down in your hechel, in your holy sanctuary. And here's the key word, b'yirasecha. B'yirasecha. And I don't know why Rashi says what Rashi says over here, ishtachvel hecha kodshecha b'yirasecha, mitoch yira, through fear. Okay? That when we daven, you're supposed to have some trepidation and some level of fear when you daven before God. Therefore, that's a kavod rosh, seriousness. So in this, the Gemara says, no, mamai, how do you know you can learn out from David? Dilma, David Shani, maybe David's different. David was not a typical person. He was a chassid. He was a great person, as we saw in the first parak. So therefore, maybe he pained himself very greatly in order to ask Hashem for more compassion, for more rachmim. So you can't learn out from these great people. And again, just like the diuk, the inference from the word v'hi, which is only referring to Chana, if you look in the pasuk that we just said in Tehillim, it's v'ani, v'ani b'rov chasnach. So maybe it's only David who's saying, I daven this way. It doesn't mean everyone else has to. El om Rav Yeshua ben Levi Mahach. Rather, we can learn out from here. Yishtachem l'Hashem b'hadras kodesh. Says that when you bow down to Hashem, which is what we do during the Shemoneh Esrei, you should daven b'hadras kodesh with a level of beautiness, hadar. Al tikri b'hadras, elo b'chedras. Don't read the word hadras with beauty, but rather with trembling. And therefore we can learn out through plain words that's how one is supposed to daven. Versus, what does that mean? Why would you want to change the actual word when the word Bahadras is meaningful in itself? So he says, Bemai. That itself, right, there's something significant to doing. Dilma li oilam emel achadras, mamish. Maybe it means that you're supposed to beautify. Ki ha de Rav Yehuda, as Rav Yehuda did, havi mitzai nafshe v'ha de matzli. He would dress himself, and then he would daven. He wouldn't just come to shul in the shorts and the t-shirts he was wearing all day. He would put on a nice pair of pants and a button-down shirt, and then he would go to shul, right? Or he would wear a hat, which some people say is the Indian of having a special garment for davening, is because of this pasuk. But anyway, the point is that we cannot derive from this pasuk either a source to davening b'kavod rosh. Ella, and this is going to be the answer of Maskana, Amar Rav Nachman Rav Yitzchak, Bar Yitzchak, Mahacha. We're going off from here. The Pasuk says, Ivnu as Hashem B'yira, that serving Hashem, and one way that we serve Hashem is through our davening, as we'll see in Rashi in a second. Ivnu as Hashem B'simcha, here it's Ivnu as Hashem B'yira, right, which is another Pasuk, and V'gil B'rada. But yet it says, and rejoice in your trembling. Which is
this goes back to the whole concept of Kafale and Harkigigas, though. It's a matter of, you do it out of love, simcha and joy, or should you do it because you fear, because you have no choice?
Both. We're supposed to serve Hashem out of love. We're supposed to love Hashem and fear Hashem. Those are two of the six constant mitzvos that we have. So, Av is a greater level than Yira, but there still needs to remain that Yira, otherwise you lose the respect that God needs. So therefore, Ivnu as Hashem b'Yira. When we daven, we have to realize what we're doing, that we're davening to God. It's not just some joke. So therefore, you have to daven b'Yira, which is b'Kovid Rosh. When Rashi, Ivnu as Hashem b'Yira, Tfila shehilanu b'makam avoda, also saw b'yira. This is how he learns it. That Ivdu represents the avoda, the Beis HaMikdash, and there's no Beis HaMikdash, we have Shema Esrim, so our tefillah is in b'makom karbanos, so therefore Ivdu, when we daven, it must be b'yira. The strange part of this sentence is the last part, which now the Gemara discusses. So that's the makor that one davens with Kovid Rosh's Ivdu as Hashem b'yira. Okay. Now, we also find the end of this pasuk, my begil verada, that you should rejoice in your trembling. What does that mean? While you're strange, it seems like two different emotions. So Amar Rav Adbar Masnam, Amar Rabba, b'makam gila shum teherada. He says, in the place where there is joy and happiness, there should also be some level of fear, of trembling, which means that a person should not have just an overabundance of just non-stop laughs, but even at the happiest occasions, one must temper it with some seriousness. Right, we're going to see that right now. This is the source of all that right here. Okay, and where do we find such a point? So Amar Rav Adam Armasna, b'makom. So he says b'makom gilo shemtei rina. Abaye havi Yosef kimei de Rabba. Abaye was sitting in front of Rabba. And Abaye was just staring at Rabba, and he was mesmerized at Rabba's facial expressions. Chazi dahavi kabodach tuva. It looked like Rabba was like way too happy. He was like, "You're too happy. Stop being so happy. You're driving me crazy." Okay, you have some of those people at work. You have one guy who's like always happy on a Monday morning. Like, stop. So what are you bodach tuva for? So he said, "Omar," he said, "but." He had a different problem. He said, "Begil barada ksiv." It says, "Begil barada." You're supposed to have a little. You're supposed to be happy, but a little bit of rada, a little bit of trembling, a little bit of seriousness. What are you doing over here? It's inappropriate. You're so happy. So Rabba answered, "Armalei on the tefillin menachna." I'm wearing tefillin. What does that mean? So, and we're going to see the same answer in a second by someone else. So there are different interpretations. According to the Marsha says, as well as others, that the fact that I'm wearing tefillin is the way that I'm able to make sure that I'm not going overboard in my simcha. That's what's grounding me. Another interesting approach is no. The reason why I'm so happy is because of the tefillin. When I'm oisik in a mitzvah, it makes me happy. Right? They, as in the breast of a chassidim, they say, mitzvah gedola lios b'simcha. So some people flip it around and say, simcha gedola lios b'mitzvah. So he was so happy because he was oisik in a mitzvah tefillin, and therefore either that's what grounded him, so he was not overly joyful, the tefillin kept reminding him of that, of not going too overboard, or the tefillin is what made him happy. Obviously, you can ask yourself a question, I put on tefillin and it doesn't make me happy. I'm wearing tefillin and I say the same stuff out of my mouth as I say when I'm not wearing tefillin. So, unfortunately, no, the answer is it's not the right thing. Rabbi Yirmiyah Havi Yosef Kimeidu Rav Zeira Chazi Havi Kabbalah Tuva. Again, Rabbi Yirmiyah, this time he was staring at a guy by the name of Rav Zeira, and Rav Zeira was seemingly fooling around and goofing off. Armalay, he used a different pasuk. He said, "B'cholayitzev niyem moiser." In all times of grief, there is a profit, which means that there is a benefit in being serious. There's a benefit in not being so overjoyful. So how could you be so overjoyful? So again, Rav Zeira said the same answer. Armalay, on the tefillin menachta, I'm wearing tefillin. And the Marsha on this word moiser, almost like if you wouldn't know the proper reading, it almost sounds like the word mutter, but moiser means profit or benefit. And the Marsha says that if we look at the difference between human beings and animals, we have koyach dibor, we have the capacity to speak. But he says, moiser min habehema ayin. The pasuk says that the moiser, the benefit between us and animals is insignificant. So if but we are not acting much different in our speech than animals, then it's moiser min habehema ayin, then there's really no profit or benefit in being anything more than like an animal. So therefore, by being serious, it'll ground us how to speak, and therefore we'll end up elevating ourselves above the animal kingdom. Let's just see a couple more lines and we'll stop. Marbere Ravina Ovid Hilul Bray. So Marbere Ravina made a halula, made a wedding, and he made this Lebray for his son. So he made a wedding. Okay. So what do you do when you have a wedding? You invite people. So who do you invite? You invite the rabbis. Chazinhu Rabbanan Dahavi Kaban Chituva. And you looked at the rabbi's table over there, which is usually pretty serious.
Right.
It wasn't very serious over there. A lot of goofing off going on. So because of the joyfulness that was occurring at the time, and apparently no tefillin was on anyone's heads at the time, Isaacasa the Mukra, he took a cup which was precious, a bas arba mezuze, 400 zuz, very, very expensive cup, the taver kimayhu, and he smashed it in front of them, v'atzivu, and they got serious. Let's just look at this top Tosfos, then we're going to discuss this more next time. This very top Tosfos says, he took this glass and smashed it, mikan nogu lishmer zechuchis b'nesuin. So some say that's one of the reasons why we break the glass at the wedding, so that, as you mentioned, even in the time of joyfulness, we remember the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, we just remember all these things. We'll talk more about that.
One question that I have, though, but we said that in those days there was going on.
Maybe it was a night wedding.